You're listening to The Review, first broadcast on the 29th of June 2013 on Monocle 24. Hello and welcome to The Review, your weekly preview and, of course, review of the arts here on Monocle 24, coming to you from Studio One at Midori House here in London with me, Andrew Muller, and Gillian DeBias.
And coming up on today's programme, we welcome back review regular Karen Krasanovich to talk us through some new cinematic releases.
Paris Hilton's hosting a party in Vegas tonight.
Where does she live? Do you think we could find a way in?
I don't know.
Come on, let's go to Paris's. I want to rob.
More on The Bling Ring and other releases shortly. It's Glastonbury weekend here in the UK, so we'll be talking festivals with Chris Greenwood, founder of Croatia's Stop Making Sense Festival, and getting his pick of top tracks for the summer season.
And we'll escape the studio to get some summer reading tips from Books and Books in Miami.
It's a multi-generational novel that is about Texas and about the birth of Texas. And it's a little bit of Lonesome Dove meets Cormac McCarthy, with a little bit of Dances with Wolves thrown in.
So, as always, lots to look forward to this week on The Review here on Monocle 24.
Hello and welcome to Studio One at Midori House here in London. And Andrew, good to see you back in London. You've been on assignment.
I have. Last week I was in Rabat in Morocco. I think I'm allowed to say that out loud now for our Monocle magazine's Mediterraneo summer newspaper.
What a great assignment.
It was because I haven't been to Morocco for many, many years, and I'd only been once before and in slightly bizarre circumstances. I spent about 12 hours in Tangiers with Def Leppard in 1995. It's a true story. But I had heard so many awful things about Marrakesh and Fez in particular, and was vaguely worried that Rabat would live down to all of those. But it wasn't like that at all. It has all the good things about a Middle Eastern city with absolutely none of the bad things.
And the lovely thing, because we have our, the main issue of Monocle, and then we have our summer newspaper. So your assignment is slightly different when you get a med assignment, isn't it?
It is, because it's they're fun to write, because they're sort of like travel features, except with a bit of reporting in them as well. In this particular case, we wanted to focus on why Morocco, unlike pretty much everywhere else in North Africa, still has the same guy in charge of it that it did 2.5 years ago. So I spoke to, people who had been activists and people who are now MPs. And yeah, it was really, really interesting.
And for the photographer, a photographic city?
He was very, very concerned at first, because obviously for our summer newspaper, the photo editors like lots of clear blue sky. And the day he arrived, it was really, really cloudy. That did eventually break, and I think he got lots of sort of nice exteriors with pretty white modernist buildings and, beautiful old riads in the Medina and, all of that kind of stuff.
Oh, well, that's great. Well, I think our med issue comes out in a couple of weeks. We are in production next week, so it will soon be on newsstands. But before we go into the show, we talk about the review as a review and preview of the art. So I would like to preview, because before the show, I just discovered you and your band are going to be playing next weekend.
We are. We're playing on, I'll keep this very, very brief. My band, Angry Country Combination, The Blazing Zoos, are playing at the, it says here, where are we playing? It's a kind of July 4th thing, except it's happening on July the 6th. We are on the same bill as two absolutely excellent other groups, the President Lincoln and Limousine, and we are at the Stag's Head. That's on Osman Road in Hoxton. There's food and stuff from about 5 p.m. Music starts at about 8. I think we're on at about 9.
You heard it here first. So wherever you are in the world, that's the place to be next weekend.
It is. You're listening to The Review on Monocle 24. Now, celebrity home robbers, a semi-reformed arch-villain, and waiting for the end of the world. All of that and more features in this week's new film releases, and those are here, those will now be discussed further by our regular review contributor, Karen Krasanovich. I stumbled all over all those words because I was saving up all my pronunciation skills for your surname.
That's very nice.
And I think we can all agree I enunciated it beautifully.
It's better than ever before, like you called me Smith last time, which was fine. Not a problem.
And quicker.
And quicker.
More to the
and
point.
Quicker, but yes.
Three whole syllables faster. Yes. The Bling Ring, Sofia Coppola's new film based on a true story.
Yes, actually, it's based on an article. I love it. It's based on a Vanity Fair article called "The Suspect Wore Louboutins," it's a wonderful title. It's about a story of I don't want to say privileged children, but yes, privileged children who discover via the internet that their favorite celebrities are out, and where their empty houses are, and they go and
break in. They go ransacking Hollywood mansions.
They go, well, they don't go in with swag bags. They kind of go in and they kind of shop.
Without money.
Like a crap Manson family.
Exactly. You know, that's like the Manson families of you know, 2010. Yeah.
You have to just love the concept, though, with, you know, all these celebrities obsessed with telling everybody what they're going to be doing and where they are. So they're tweeting when they're out of the house.
Yeah.
So it kind of is such a simple concept.
You know, there was a similar crime ring in Liverpool and Manchester a couple of years ago when gangs used to target the homes of footballers who were away playing in Europe.
Yeah.
Except on one glorious night when two burglars hadn't read the news and discovered that Everton's Burley centre-forward Duncan Ferguson was injured and tried to burgle his house while he was at home. It went badly for them.
It's interesting that they think, oh, well, there's only one person lives in this house, then there couldn't possibly be people that might work there or, you know, guard dogs or something like that. But yes, I thought that was quite interesting. Foursquare just completely boggles my mind. I don't know why anybody would want to say, hey, I'm here.
But what do you think drew Sophia Coppola to this story?
You know, personally, I found this movie really irritating because I found it was just kind of a one-trick pony. They go in and are robbing, and you know, Emma Watson, ooh, nice, you know, lots of dancing, and she's very sexy, which was great. But I'm not the demographic that this is pitched to, so I'm going to keep that in mind. You know, I actually would like a story, but it's fluffy. It's the news come to life. And it's a kind of a vicarious adventure because as much as I'm not interested in Paris Hilton, I do want to see inside her house. But I hate to admit that. It hurts so hard. It hurts.
So it should.
And I have to say the one really exciting point, I've actually decided that I'm going to have a different feature for my Monocle Radio reviews rather than anything else I do. I'm going to have best moment in movies and then the current note about the movie. Ooh, because you're special. That the best moment in this was when we go into Paris Hilton's house and we see that she has pillow cushions with her face on them.
Doesn't everybody?
Oh, I'm sorry. I don't have my band isn't playing in Rochester.
you should see my curtains. Does Sophia Coppola believe that this story has anything to say beyond the story? Is she trying to make a point?
Absolutely. No, she does. And to be fair, I've read a few interviews where she's been talking about it because I hate it when a movie makes me so mad. This movie made me angry.
And sends you too.
Every time my friends were going to see it, like, yeah, you're going to be good and mad afterwards. But she said that she's a mother now. She's got two children. And she says that this is a real comment on the vapidness of teenage society. And yeah. I think it is. I think it is a good comment on that.
Okay, well, we have a clip from The Bling Ring, which we can hear now.
Paris Hilton's hosting a party in Vegas tonight.
Where does she live? Do you think we could find a way in?
I don't know.
Come on, let's go to Paris's. I want to rob.
Police are investigating the connection of the Hollywood Hills burglaries.
America has this sick fascination with a Bonnie and Clyde kind of thing.
It all comes back to, like, bad choices. Who you have as your friend.
Can't take your dog.
But he likes me.
I mean, as well as sounding like a crap Manson family, it also sounds like a G-rated American Psycho.
Yeah, I think that's about right. With dog stealing. Yes, it is. It's almost like the crime, but nobody really gets hurt. I mean, some people steal some designer gear, you know? That's about it. They go home and their parents are surprised. There. I just told you the whole movie.
Well, that's...
Andrew's booking his tickets.
That's The Bling Ring done with. Moving along to Despicable Me 2.
I love this movie. I love this movie so much. I've got it as a ringtone. The Minions giggling. How sad is that?
Will people understand it if they haven't seen Despicable Me?
It's better if you see Despicable Me first, but you will understand it. There is... okay, this is an animated movie. It's computer generated. It's the story of Gru, who is an evil person. He's now very nice, almost too nice. He's raising three adopted daughters. I know that seems weird in this day and age, but everything's above the board. And they have little minions, and they sort of look like, I don't know, potatoes. I don't know, with potatoes.
I mean,
with
again,
eyes.
Who doesn't? But what has brought about this character shift in Gru? Do we learn that?
I think the love of the girls, really. I mean, okay. That's how he gets changed in Despicable Me. But this one is the story of Despicable Me is a major triumph in marketing because this movie wasn't going to be made, and I always say his name wrong, Meledandri.
Just call him Smith.
Thank you. I will. Left 20th Century Fox, where he went on and took this. And he's a real genius behind the marketing of this film. And it's funny and it's pacey. And it's delightful.
Well, I haven't seen it yet, but I watched the trailer. And I mean, it delighted me. And one of the things that I thought was interesting is everyone was raving about the James Bond film, but I missed all the gadgets. I really missed the inventiveness and the inventions of the gadgets. And suddenly I see this trailer and there are like the imagination of these fantasy gadgets is what I missed about Bond. So I'm going to see it just for those.
Please, please do. And another thing, there's no lingering. I mean, there's so much content here. You get a gadget and then you move on to another gadget, or you get a character and you move on to another character. You know, we're not seeing the same things twice. And it's wonderfully pacey. The only thing I could criticize is that Gru was a little too nice, and maybe we would have liked a little bit more nuance, but that's being very picky. The stars that lend their voices are Steve Carell, Kristen Wiig, and Kristen Wiig, I always say her name wrong, and Benjamin Bratt. But do see it. Take your kids.
Well, it sounds a bit like this.
We are the Anti-Villain League, dedicated to fighting crime on a global scale. A new villain has surfaced. You know how a villain thinks. That's why we brought you here. I am the League's director, Silas Ramsbottom.
Bottom.
Hilarious.
That's my ringtone. That clip is my ringtone.
From the bottom.
From Despicable Me to owing slightly something there to Beavis and Butthead, I think.
A lot.
A film worth seeing, then?
Yes. Yes. If you've got a silly bone, a childish bone in your body, then please go and see it. And don't rush home like me and make a ringtone for your phone.
I'm regretting that we asked you to turn your phone off for the recording.
But you got it right there in beautiful stereo.
Moving along then to what I suspect is another fairly silly film, judging by the trailer and judging by the cast and judging by the concept and indeed judging by the reviews. This is The End.
Yes, that's right. This is Seth Rogen's directorial debut, actually co-directing with even Goldberg. This is the fourth film that they're collaborated on, including Superbad, Pineapple Express, which is a film I'd like to punch. Then again, I don't smoke, so...
And see if I can guess what sort of character Seth Rogen plays. Is it a not terribly sophisticated, somewhat bumbling but relatively affable sort of slightly nerdish American guy?
God, you're psychic.
Canadian.
I know. Yeah.
You really, really scare. Yeah, Canadian. I went to see this thinking this is really not going to be a film I'm going to enjoy. This is going to be just raunchy and stupid and slapstick and full of drug references I've done that already. I don't need to do it again. I don't need to watch it. It's actually absolutely wonderful. This film is fantastic.
I don't believe you.
I
tried to read the synopsis and, you know, line four in, I'm thinking, I want to punch this film.
Well, this is like Despicable Me, only with real people, without the gadgets and the crime. Well, there's a little bit of crime.
So it's nothing like Despicable Me at all.
Jeez, I just can't keep up with you today. Okay, while they're attending a party at James Franco's house, Seth Rogen, Jai Baruchel, and other celebrities are faced with the apocalypse. That's the log line right there, which isn't mine, by the way. I've just plagiarized. But it's one of these things where they wanted to make a film where they sort of played themselves, which is refreshing.
And it's less work.
And it's easy. Yeah. They only have to remember a few words, which is nice. But it's the fast pace and the wiseness of it and the confidence of it is amazing. Outrageous things happen here, things that you couldn't predict. I mean, it is the apocalypse around James Franco's house.
Well, James Franco's house, you would have to assume, would be affected in the event of the apocalypse.
I would think the apocalypse would be inside his house.
I hope they're insured.
Because I was thinking around the turn of the century, which now seems long ago enough that we can call it the turn of the century, there was a rash of end-of-the-world movies. America had a sudden fascination with, you know, Independence Day and Armageddon and Deep Impact, et cetera, et cetera. Does this harken back to any of those, or is this just a... a thing unto itself.
I think that this actually, yes, it does. It does harken back to Independence Day in particular, but it is also maybe making a nod to some Shyamalan movies, as well as the, you know, global warming. You know, is it the religious apocalypse? Is it aliens? What is it? Is it natural? There's all sorts of things going on. But I have to say, one of the best moments. Remember the new feature I was talking about?
Yeah.
Okay, best moment is when Rihanna is here. There's celebrities like chocolate chips and chocolate chip cookies here. She hauls off and slugs a guest. Boy, that girl can punch. Wow. And actually, a sequel has been announced just a couple days ago.
So how can you have a sequel to a film? Sorry, a sequel to a film about the world ending.
Titanic 2.
Well, yes. It is, but has anyone sort of explained how this is going to work?
I think it's top secret.
But yeah, I mean, Andrew's talking about Armageddon and the end of the world very seriously. But to me, from seeing it and reading it and watching the trailer, it just seems to reference more reality TV and Big Brother. And
yeah, it is. Know. But if, let's say if during Big Brother, blue beams came into the Big Brother house and started carrying people away.
That would be awesome.
Would be
I'd actually watch that. We do have a clip from This Is the End as well.
What the?
The sheriff's office is urging people to stay in their homes right now.
I think it's the apocalypse. It's all in here.
And he opened the bottomless pit.
The sinkhole?
What you want, son? We should just stay in here, fortify this bitch, and take inventory of all the food we have.
We got 12 bottles of water, 56 beers, Nutella, CT Crunch, a Milky Way.
Can I have that Milky Way?
No, you can't have the Milky Way. It's my special food. I like it.
I want some of the Milky Way.
I'd be pretty bummed if I don't at least get a bite of the Milky Way.
What you want, son? This is my king. This is my lane.
A deeply philosophical work, clearly.
Yeah, there's deeper meanings in there.
With a great soundtrack.
Yes, a very, very good soundtrack. But again, really fast-paced. You're surprised all the time. The minute you think it's going to go flabby and sort of crappy. Can I say crappy? Okay, I just did.
You just have.
Sorry, excuse me.
It's too late now.
Rather not very good. It picks itself up and zings you again with something funny, something surprising, something visually arresting, something unexpected.
Do we ever learn what is causing the apocalypse?
Or do I have to say?
No, probably not.
Yeah, I don't want to spoil it.
My favorite moment, by the way, from any of those turn of the century apocalypse films, I went to see Deep Impact or whichever one was the one with the meteor in a cinema in London. And when bits of the meteor shear off and hit targets on Earth, obviously they'd thought for an American audience, the only European skyline anyone would recognize was Paris. So you have that scene of Paris being obliterated by this meteorite. And of course, in a London cinema, whole place cheered as soon as it happened.
Same thing happened in Team America, wasn't it?
Karen Krasanovic, thank you as ever for joining us here on The Review. Stay with us here on Monocle 24. After this short break, we will be taking our weekly cultural journey around the world with Nelly Gotcheva.
All around the world, Monocle 24's growing network of correspondents bring you the latest news, reportage and insight from Beirut to Bogota, Sydney to Singapore.
For Monocle in Paris, I'm Tom Burgess-Watson.
For Monocle in Berlin, I'm Kimberly Bradley.
For Monocle in Pristina.
In New York.
In Cairo.
In Sao Paulo.
I'm Guy Delorme.
For Monocle.
For Monocle.
In Tel Aviv.
For Monocle.
In San Francisco.
In North Vancouver.
In Ramallah.
I'm Aisha Spears.
I'm Joseph Dana.
For Monocle, I'm Sheena Rossiter.
For Monocle in Hong Kong, I'm Liv Levitchnik.
In London.
Bangkok.
Buenos Aires.
In Bogota.
So whether you want to know what's happening in the corridors of power, in the boardrooms of the aviation giants, or the ateliers of the best design companies, stay tuned to Monocle 24. Monocle 24, keeping an eye and an ear on the world.
Culture on Monocle 24 is untouchable. Go on, just try and do it. Try and grab a handful of the top-grade cultural radio that we're dishing out and see if you can touch it. Well, exactly. Luckily, though, you can feel it. Feel the passion of the unusually button-bright presentation.
It's a fantastic contrast, and it's one of those ones that ask you to look at the brushwork, to look just at the canvas.
Feel the craftsmanship in the breathtaking live Midori House sessions.
You know, I consider myself an entertainer, so I'm really about communication. I'm not really about expressing myself so much as trying to communicate with people and bring them to tears or bring them to laughter or what have you.
Feel the lovingly hand-stitched production, and most of all, feel the love of art.
It's there, and it's true, but it's really only a small part of this work.
Feel the love of fiction, feel the love of film, feel the love of music, feel the love generally.
It is the most extraordinary collation of works that you would never normally see together.
Why not invite me round? Culture with Robert Bound is a well-behaved house guest and a joy to entertain.
That's Culture with Robert Bound, premiering every Monday at 1900 hours UK time, right here on Monocle 24.
And you're listening to The Review here on Monocle 24 with me, Andrew Muller and Gillian DeBias. And it's time now to cross to our Toronto Bureau Chief, Nelly Gotcheva, to hear some cultural treats she's dug out from around the world for us this weekend.
In Dusseldorf, we challenge you to check out Thomas Saraceno's gigantic interactive installation entitled In Orbit. Suspended 25 meters above K21 Piazza, it creates a surreal landscape of steel wire construction spanning across the museum's vast glass dome. It features huge inflated PVC globes that are accessible for visitors to climb in and explore. In Orbit will be at K21 Art House until this autumn. If in New York, celebrate bike and cycling culture through film and music with a 13th edition of the Bicycle Film Festival. This year's program includes over 60 documentaries, narratives, and experimental video projects from 18 countries. This weekend, we recommend director Maya Tanaka's short film Hopeless Romantic or Bicycle, a documentary that follows the Kenyan national cycling team. The Bicycle Film Festival is at various venues across New York. For more details, go to bicyclefilmfestival.com. Currently ongoing in London is the fourth edition of the Masterpiece Art Fair. Set in the Royal Hospital in Chelsea, the week-long event presents 160 galleries. Among the featured items this year is the first edition of The Great Gatsby from 1925. Masterpiece 2013 is on until the 3rd of July. In Singapore, design lovers can enjoy Essential Eames, a Herman Miller exhibition. Housed at the Art Science Museum, the show features rare pieces by power couple Charles and Ray Eames. Besides the couple's iconic furniture, on display are architecture models, toy designs, plus films and paintings. Essential Eames is on until the 5th of January. And finally, to set the tone right for the approaching Canada Day on Monday, we celebrate three Canadian music festivals. While international jazz festivals enter their final weekend in Vancouver and Toronto, Montreal is only just getting warmed up, with a 34th edition running until the 7th of July. On Saturday in Vancouver, check out local band Butter and Egg. And if in Toronto, enjoy Aline Morales. Meanwhile, in Montreal, we recommend you spend your Sunday evening with 10-time Grammy winner George Benson. And now let's hear beautiful Aline Morales with Como Polen. Saudade, tristeza, romance, beleza, se foi como polen de tão bela flor, yeah. For Monocle in Toronto, I'm Nelly Gotcheva.
That was Aileen Morales with Como Pollen, ending that report there by Nelly Gotcheva. And it is time now for our weekly music review, and it's Glastonbury weekend here in the UK, so we thought it was the perfect opportunity to look at some festivals taking place in the Northern Hemisphere this summer.
One event which has got people crossing borders in search of good music and good times, or at least in search of less rain and mud than they'd encounter at a British festival, is Stop Making Sense, which kicks off on the 1st of August in a bay between Split and Zadar on the beautiful Adriatic coast of Croatia. And to tell us more about this event and play us a few tunes and give us his tips on other festivals around the world, we're delighted to welcome Chris Greenwood, the founder of Stop Making Sense, into the studio. Chris, welcome. The obvious question, I guess, is how does one end up running a rock festival in Croatia?
Well, first of all, it's not a rock festival. It's a dance music event. My history is in UK festivals. I was part of the team that brought you The Big Chill. And I also did a lot of work for various big brands taking dance music into rock festivals. So when The Big Chill ended, or my involvement with them ended a few years ago, I had the opportunity to take the dance element of the festival to Croatia. Some friends of mine have had a site out there, this beautiful place just north of Zadar, part of a hotel complex. And they basically invited me and said, do you want to start something new with us? There was three or four events at the time in Croatia, and a very receptive audience, local government, wanting that that kind of tourism. So we're up to our fourth edition this year. We did have to move site when the initial place was sold, the initial complex. And the idea is that in this particular spot, there's four events and we all share the infrastructure, the staging, all the bits and bobs that you need. And we market and we invite people from all over Europe to come along.
There's so many different festivals around the world. And other than the obvious music that makes a festival great, how do you give a festival identity? How do you make a festival special? What are the key ingredients?
Well, that's a million-dollar question for sure. I mean, festivals have become quite... everyone's having a go. I mean, usually good ideas don't stay secret for very long. In my particular case, it's about involving different club promoters and different club crews to come along. What we do is it's sort of like a, how would you say, an amalgamation of different crews from different cities who each bring their resident DJs and they all choose one guest DJ. So we have these different sessions spread out on a beach bar. We have boat parties that go out twice a day. And then we have this amazing open air nightclub that runs till 6-7 in the morning, which is quite a unique thing to be able to dance under the stars, uninhibited by sound restrictions, etc. So that's my USP, I suppose, is bringing these different crews in. And we've got people coming from Moscow, from Slovenia, from Norway, from Spain. And to be honest, yeah, a lot from London, especially East London, which is kind of my stomping ground. So that, I suppose, is my take on it.
And do you notice that your crowds are coming from as far afield as well, or is it mostly locals?
The locals do come, but the locals, even though Croatia is now part of the EU, their spending power is considerably less than ours, or people in the EU and further afield. So we found that it's predominantly UK, but we've now marketed quite heavily in Berlin. And so we're getting a lot of German clubbers and festival people coming. And also Russians are coming. And also as far afield as Australia, the States. I think a lot of people, if they're coming to Europe, they'll choose an event somewhere and make that as part of their summer tour, as it were.
It sounds like it makes a lot of sense. Why have you called it Stop Making Sense?
Well, I think I decided to call it that because I wanted something, a sort of sentence and a three-letter description of the event. I wanted to shy away from the usual classic kind of slightly cliched names. It was also it's the title of a Talking Heads film, which came out in 1984. It was a rock documentary. And it just resonated. It also abbreviates to SMS, which is quite catchy. And I also found that for non-English speakers, it resonated quite strongly. I mean, you know, some people find the name stupid. Some people like it, but what's in the name?
You mentioned there that thing of people planning European trips around a specific event. But how competitive is that now in Europe? Because there are, I mean, in Britain alone, you can spend pretty much every weekend between April and October at a festival if you feel like it.
That's pretty much the case in Croatia now as well, especially with the dance element. People have been, you know, tipping it as the new old Ibiza, because of the ability to dance all night and have quite a sort of relaxed attitude towards clubbing. Yeah, it is a crowded market. There's no doubt about it. What you have to be really careful about is pricing, and your offering and trying to be original. We champion as much as possible new acts that we hope will be big names. On the first edition, I had a band called Django Django, who have now gone on to bigger and big things. In fact, they were just on a Glastonbury, I think quite a high up ranking on one of the big stages. So it's about trying to be ahead of the game and offering value for money, good sound, you know, good security, a really beautiful environment, good food, all those things that, you know, everyone wants at the end of the day.
You talk about good sound. So what's 2013? What are some of the exciting sounds we're going to be hearing?
Well, we've got, as headliners, because of the nature of the programming where each crew chooses a guest, we've actually got 10 headliners. I have shied away from live music because it's simply too expensive to fly a band out to an event for, you know, essentially a 90-minute or even half an hour long show. So the DJs we've got is we've got Armin Dixon from Inner Visions, German crew. Got Steve Bug, Lindstrom, and Prince Thomas from Oslo, Norway. T. Williams, who's a luminary from Rinse FM here in London. John Talabot, who's a music maker, DJ from Barcelona. And then a whole raft of, as yet, maybe not so well known, DJs from Slovenia, from Croatia, and from Russia and the Ukraine.
You've also brought in some tracks for us to listen to. I think I'm right in saying that these artists are not actually appearing at Stop Making Sense this year. Is that right? They're just things that you happen to like.
Correct.
The first one is Bev Lee Harlan. Introduce her if you would.
Well, I also own a music venue here in London, in East London, called Bedroom Bar, and she's appearing in a couple of weeks. She's a fantastic singer and music maker. She uses pots and pans and typewriters in her music, in her live show. So it's quite original, and it's a great show. She's also on a label called Wawa 45, which is one of the few small labels left in this country who are still keeping the faith and putting out excellent music and supporting their artists at a grassroots level.
Well, let's have a listen to a bit of that. This is Bev Lee Harlan with Why Don't You Do Right. Bev Lee Harlan there with Why Don't You Do Right. That's the first choice of today's musical guest, Chris Greenwood from Stop Making Sense, the Stop Making Sense Festival, by the way. I quite like that. I couldn't work out whether it reminded me more of Amy Winehouse or Charlotte Gainsbourg or someone, though.
Yeah, she's got elements of both, I'd say. And that particular track, you can't really hear the typewriters and pans out
because it's a remix.
I was listening out for the typewriter.
Because that's a remix by the Coleman Brothers, sort of cha-cha retro style. So she's amazing.
What's she like as a performer? Like if she's going to be playing in a couple of weeks time, what's she
just very charismatic. And you know, I think that my take on live music is, you know, it's got to be more than pressing a button. There has to be a performance element. Certainly that's what, you know, floats my boat.
Well, that was Beverly Harling, and there's more details of dates and upcoming stuff at beverlyharling.com. Your second choice today, the Fania All-Stars.
Yes, well, this particular track is... the Fania All-Stars are a band from the 70s based in New York, which really sort of at the pinnacle of the salsa Latin style when it emerged in that period in New York. So this was like a super group of all the top salsa players. And this has been remixed recently by a DJ also based in New York called Uproot Andy, who's one of my personal favorite DJs, because I do play out a bit myself. And this track, without fail, will set the dance floor on fire.
It goes like this. Fania All-Stars, they're the second choice of our musical guest, Chris Greenwood, from the Stop Making Sense Festival. The Fania All-Stars, as you were saying, was sort of a 1960s, 70s salsa supergroup. Are they still functioning or still going in any capacity?
I think because it's quite a loose group of musicians, I think they do sometimes get back together. I mean, a lot of them are pretty old now, but quite a few are still performing. You mentioned earlier that these tracks weren't necessarily of artists performing at Start Making Sense, but I should add that that's the kind of musical style that we have going on during the day. We have a beach bar, so DJs are playing on the beach.
So it's fairly likely if you go to Start Making Sense, you will hear that track once or twice.
Definitely. Yes, I can guarantee that.
Now, you also manage bands, and I think the next track is from a band you manage.
That's right, yes. More Like Trees. They're a London-based trio. And the style of music is acoustic dance, although press have decided to call it strum and bass, which we weren't sure about, but it sticks, you know. So if it sticks, then fine. It's fine by us. And we've just released an album on Belly Breaking Even Records, another small UK independent. And this is the single and a remix of the single. It's a cover of Frankie Valli's The Night, and it goes a little like something like this.
Turn your head.
That is More Like Trees with their version of Frankie Valli's The Night. More Like Trees, a band selected and indeed managed by today's musical guest, Chris Greenwood from Stop Making Sense Festivals. As somebody who runs a festival, do you spend much time at other people's festivals?
I used to a lot more than I do now, I have to admit. I find it slightly painful. The UK ones, I find, I literally worked over 90 festivals in the UK over the years. And I must say, yeah, I tend to sort of dip in and out.
So which ones would you recommend?
Well, the UK one that's actually just gone, but I would thoroughly recommend it for next year. It's called Gotwood. It's up in Anglesey in North Wales. It's essentially a dance festival set in the most amazing stately home with woods and beaches and cliffs and
boutique tents we were reading about.
There is that, yeah. The you can't get away from boutique tents, I'm afraid. Which they're here to stay.
Something of a contradiction in terms, I'd have thought. And further afield from Britain?
Further afield, there's a reggae festival in southern Spain on the site of Benicassim, which is a big kind of rock, more traditional style festival. But a few weeks afterwards, there's this event called Rototom, and it's just wall-to-wall reggae. So you've got to like reggae, but the unique thing about these guys is that they're very inclusive, and they actually invite reggae bands from all countries to come and play. And they've got a very nice sort of method of choosing the bands. There's like band searches and competitions in different regions of Europe. So it's very inclusive and very good vibes.
Chris Greenwood, thank you very much for joining us and being our musical guest here on The Review. The Stop Making Sense Festival kicks off in Croatia on the 1st of August, so there's plenty of time to book yourself a flight. stopmakingsense.eu for more details. And it would, of course, make no sense to play you out with anything other than something from Talking Heads' Stop Making Sense soundtrack. This is This Must Be the Place. Talking Heads with This Must Be the Place, the final selection of today's musical guest, Chris Greenwood from Stop Making Sense Festival.
Time now for us to get some cultural highlights for the weekend from a city around the world. Today we're crossing to Helsinki, and our resident film, Finn, Marcus Hippie, is here to tell us what there is to look forward to over the coming days.
You are in for a treat if you are heading to Helsinki this weekend. Even though the Finnish climate can be unpredictable, the bright and long evenings mean that you'll feel more energized than you have for a long time. This is one of the busiest weekends in the Finnish capital this summer, and there are as many as three major festivals to choose from. You may well enjoy Baseline Festival, showcasing the best new music Finland has to offer, ranging from disco to rap, jazz and soul. Or maybe you want to see what Helsinki Pride has to offer. Saturday has the big parade, and both Saturday and Sunday evening see quite a few parties around central Helsinki. Don't be surprised if you see loads of men dressed up as brides. They all just really liked this year's Finnish Eurovision entry called Marry Me. If you fancy something more traditional, you may want to visit Tuska Festival, an event dedicated entirely to metal music. I think the name of the festival summarizes what is to be expected. Tuska is Finnish and it stands for pain. If music or pain isn't your thing, there is also the Taidehalli Museum, which is currently exhibiting the works of the world-famous American photojournalist Steve McCurry. And there is also the Finnish Museum of Photography, which is currently showing Nine Nameless Mountains, a collection of photos by Maanantai Collective about a journey through the Norwegian Lofoten Islands. If you want to finish the night with a bit of dancing, there is one place you should pick over the bounty of options. Kaiku Club is the newest and, at the moment, one of the most popular spots in Helsinki. Located in an old factory building in Kallio, this formerly run-down area is now well known for its nightlife and fashion. This weekend is not just about Finnish DJs. They have teamed up with the neighboring club Kuudes Linja for Kaiku Carnival, a joint party featuring Finnish, American and Swedish acts. For Monocle, I am Markus Hippi.
You're listening to The Review on Monocle 24. We'll be back next to get some recommended reading from the East Coast of the USA.
Each Sunday on Monocle 24, we like to take stock.
The wonder of history for the journalist is you can delve into this immense booty of information.
You don't write a book lightly, and I didn't really want to write a book, so I had to find something which could only be explained in a book.
Take the global pulse.
Singapore is too small to have a known huge art scene to be competitive on a global level.
The old distinction between policy being made in London and executed by diplomats abroad has gone.
A lot of people come south for the opium harvest, and literally as soon as the last opium poppy is harvested, they will then take up arms and fight for a few weeks. It's purely practical.
And occasionally take things down a notch too.
I mean, if someone wants to buy it for $100 million, we would sell it.
Our radio station's got quite a wealthy demographic. I think you're in the right place.
To end the week with the best chat.
I've been confused for Kenny Loggins, actually.
I want to start with a very simple question. Why did we go to war with Iraq?
Some great music.
A grand piano is kind of a condescending icon at this point.
And some good fun to set up Sunday and warm the week ahead. The Monocle Weekly. Your week starts here.
And welcome back. It's Saturday afternoon in London. You're listening to The Review with Andrew Muller and Gillian DeBias. We're finishing the show today by getting out of the studio to get some reading recommendations from the other side of the Atlantic.
Miami was pretty quiet and authors scarce on the ground when Mitchell Kapland opened his Coral Gables bookstore, Books and Books, 31 years ago. With a particular emphasis on art and design books and support for local writers, he's retained loyal patronage through his passion for literature, shared by his staff, and through a rich schedule of live music, exhibitions and author events.
The superstore chains and online discounters eventually shuttered all the other regional independent bookstores, but now the chain stores have left, while Books and Books has expanded to new locations as well as initiating film and publishing ventures. Kaplan's passion for literature is steadfast. Writers are his rock stars. The Miami Book Fair International, which he co-founded, attracts tens of thousands of people. We sat down with Mitchell in a relatively quiet corner on a typically busy Thursday afternoon and asked the soft-spoken bookseller for a few recommendations.
I'm Mitchell Kaplan, the owner of Books and Books. This is our 31st year of being in business here in Coral Gables, Florida. We have a number of other locations that we've opened since, but right now we're in a building that we moved into about 15 years ago that's built around a courtyard. We have a cafe, have music on the weekends, and 600 to 700 author events at the bookshop. There's a wonderful book that you will hear about called The Execution of Noah P. Singleton by Elizabeth Silver. It's her first novel. It's a really, really well-written account of a woman, a very unlikely person to be on death row. And the whole narrative thrust is an attempt for the reader to understand just why she's on death row and why she's not fighting her sentence. And then popping up sort of out of nowhere is the supposed victim's mother, who is trying to, we think, to get her off death row. And there's a lot of flashback and a lot of internal dialogue. And it's, for a first effort, it is remarkable. And that is The Execution of Noah P. Singleton. Another book that's actually made it onto the bestseller list is by Philip Meyer, and it's called The Son. It's a multi-generational novel that is about Texas and about the birth of Texas. And it's a little bit of Lonesome Dove meets Cormac McCarthy, and with a little bit of Dances with Wolves thrown in. The very first figure you meet in this family actually is kidnapped by Native Americans and made to live with them in a very brutal time, in a very brutal period. And then you're taken from generation to generation up to the present time, where the family has made its money in oil. And it's quite, quite beautifully done. It hit the bestseller list. It's the novelist's second novel. His name is Philip Meyer, and we will hear a lot from Philip Meyer. There are books that I would love people to know about that are not necessarily just out. There's a marvelous book by a guy named Tom Franklin who wrote a book called Crooked Letter, Crooked Letter, which is the way you say Mississippi. M-I-S-S-I-S-S-I-P-P-I, but they put in Crooked Letter in there. And it takes place in Mississippi, and it tracks two men. One is white, one is black, and you begin to understand where they're connected, and then you find out later on how deeply they were connected. One becomes the sheriff, one becomes a suspect in a murder, and it's what I affectionately call novels with murder. In other words, it's a literary novel, but it has a murder in it. It's not necessarily a murder mystery, although there is a mystery, and it's quite a remarkable mystery. And that's called Crooked Letter, Crooked Letter. Tom Franklin is one of our great writers. He lives in Mississippi now himself. And in fact, he and his wife have a new novel about to come out. Well, there's a marvelous writer named James Salter. You know, he wrote a book called Light Years. And that book is a book that was written back in the 80s and or the 70s even. And it's a book that I read as a young bookseller. It was here in the store. Picked it up and I couldn't put it down, and I've recommended it over the years. And it's basically the story, kind of the soup to nuts story of a marriage, starting at the beginning and going all the way to the end. And it's written, he writes so beautifully and so lyrically that you almost feel like you're swept away as you're reading this. And you're left with impressions as opposed to being left with strong plot details. It's almost like an impressionistic novel. Raymond Carver was an early enthusiasm of mine. More recently, Michael Ndiaye's novels I've been getting into, Jamaica Kincaid, and of course, the incredible work of some of our local writers. And one of the things in terms of publishing, it's not your traditional publishing house. We work primarily with authors directly, and we've done a number of really cool things. We did a book of photos. We worked with the great photographer Bunny Yeager and did a book that we then sold to Rizzoli, and they brought out Bunny. In her book that we did with her has photographs of these beautiful, beautiful unclothed women standing in front of archaeological ruins. She used to suggest men's magazines to do shoots at archaeological places in South America just so she could go visit them. We did another wonderful book with John Dufresne where he edited a collection of very dark, dark holiday stories called Blue Christmas. And we have these wonderful authors who have written original stories for it. You know, when I was just starting, there were not a lot of writers who were operating down here. But now it's just exploded.
And that was the wonderful voice of Mitchell Kaplan, founder of Books and Bookstore in Miami. And thanks to Nancy Akram and George Fishman in Miami for sending that interview.
You've been to Books and Books.
It was a delight because I was actually in Miami covering Art Basel and Design Miami. And when you're swirling around and everyone's talking arts and design and canvases, I made a point of sneaking into this bookstore. It was kind of a relief and a bit of an oasis to have hard copy books and ideas and writers. It was wonderful.
But is it surviving and thriving? Was it full of people actually buying books?
Yeah. Oh, no. Well, it's a destination bookstore. So you do get people who want to come out and they come out with bags of books. Literally, it's like people who scavenge at, treasure hunts. They come out with books, real books.
That brings us to the end of our Saturday review. For now, it's goodbye from all of us here at Midori House. Our show today was produced by Katie Bilbo and Fernando Augusto Pacheco and researched by Tess McCann. Our studio manager was Claire Urban.
And if you're keen for more culture on Monocle 24, the new edition of Culture with Robert Bound will be on air at 1900 hours London time. Here's what Rob's got in store this week.
On the latest edition, we speak to one of Britain's best artists about his plan to build his own art school. We speak to one of Hollywood's leading directors and ask how to make a movie. And we visit Seoul's hottest music hood.
We'll hand back over to Georgina Godwin with the weekend edition next, where you can catch our pick of the week's best Monocle 24 stories, guests and features on The Curator. And don't forget to tune into the Monocle Weekly on Sunday at midday London time with Robert Bound and Hugo MacDonald. You've been listening to The Review with me, Andrew Muller and Julian Debias. Have a great weekend.